Ta-Nehisi Coates.
And for very, like, for $30 more, you get a double package of that and Chasing the Flame.
Two great books for a small pledge, relatively small pledge, of $150. 212-209-2950, or go to give2wbai.org on the web. And really, show your appreciation of the efforts, and because, believe me, behind the scenes, Katie drives me crazy every time. She gives me so much information. I'm just like, oh, I'm drowning in information. And she somehow makes it coherent here. 212-209-2950. And give2wbai.org on the web. The next show is coming up. Any last words, Katie?
No, just check us out on iTunes, SoundCloud. Follow us on iTunes. Rate us, review us, and we'll be back next week with Johan, talking to Johan Hari.
Okay.
Yeah, tune in next week, 6 to 7.
All right.
Thank you.
October 31st at 2 p.m. Equal Time for Free Thought brings you the award-nominated documentary Merchants of Doubt. Merchants of Doubt shows how unscrupulous corporations deploy an army of liars misleading the public on a variety of issues, from personal health to those of global magnitude.
I believe nicotine is not addictive.
Dioxins, pesticides, there's no evidence these are harming us.
These people become well known for casting doubt on global warming.
Catastrophic global warming is a hoax.
It's all about preventing you from looking where the action really is, which is in the science.
It's kind of an amazing accomplishment. Such a small group of people have had an enormous impact on public opinion.
So on Saturday, October 31st at 2, be sure to tune in to Equal Time for Free Thought as we expose the merchants of doubt, because some conspiracies are real.
Hi, listeners, this is Jeff Brady with Another News. Tune in on Saturday, October 31st at 3 p.m. for a very interesting two-hour fundraiser. We'll be offering a compelling DVD pack from Harry Hubbard about ancient maps, depicting a North Pole region not shown on any modern maps, and also presentations on the Southern Illinois Cave repository of Egyptian artifacts from 25 BC. Remember, you won't hear this kind of information on any other radio station. Support the station with the courage to bring you Harry Hubbard's research. He's been generous with his rare collection of books, artifacts, and ancient maps. If you've wondered about the reality of a Hollow Earth entrance, Atlantis, or you want to know who the Melungeons are, join me and the Paradigm Crusher, Harry Hubbard, live on Halloween afternoon, Saturday, October 31st at 3 p.m. for a riveting In Other News special fundraiser right here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City.
Joy of resistance.
A woman's right to choose to be pregnant or not has never been as threatened as a bogus investigation of Planned Parenthood takes place in Congress and clinics across the country are shuttered on any and every pretext. On Thursday, November 5th, 9 to 11 p.m., Joy of Resistance will part the curtain of lies with the award-winning DVD, I Had an Abortion. Cutting across race, age, class, and religion, 10 women break the taboos and talk freely about their lives. We'll also offer a CD of gems from our collection, clips from the 1969 first abortion speak-out, Loretta Ross on family planning in the black community, who is behind the doctored Planned Parenthood videos, the late great Roz Baxendall, and music of the movement. That's Thursday, November 5th, 9 to 11 p.m. Because
don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone?
And you're listening to radio station, where am I? WBAI New York. It's 7:01, maybe 7:02, depending on where you are. And that means it's time, once again, for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse. Oh,
conoscenza del vissuto degli uomini non è una scienza esatta, bensì un'esperienza legata alla contingenza e un processo che evolve ininterrottamente.
Yes, it's the two-hour version of Off the Hook here on WBAI. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined by Gigi D'Agostino, I think, for the whole 2 hours. I don't suppose anybody understood what he just said.
No? I don't think it would be appropriate to translate.
Maybe not, maybe not. Joined tonight, that was the voice of Mike over there.
Hi.
Kyle? Wait a minute, hold on. I forgot to turn your mic on. You gotta get, go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, four microphones here. And Rob T. Firefly.
Buongiorno.
And down in, somewhere, hang on, I gotta figure out which. Why don't we mark the thing that with the phone to say phone? Which one is it?
This one?
Ah,
yeah, that's it.
I can tell because my voice gets all tinny.
I hear it.
Bernie.
Greetings from Philadelphia.
Welcome, welcome. Now, I heard in the news today that runaway blimp got away. You hightailed it in your car on the interstate and managed to track it down using GPS and then got a high-powered shotgun and was able to bring the thing down in a field somewhere in Columbia County. Am I getting that right?
Not exactly. I was looking for it, Emmanuel. It kind of passed near Philadelphia. It was spotted northwest of Philadelphia, about an hour from me, and it was about a mile high, dragging a 6,000-foot steel cable. This is a military aerostat, like a blimp, only it's tethered. Something called JLEN, the Joint Land Attack Cruise Missile Defense Elevated Netted Sensor System. It's supposed to look for cruise missiles, basically. It's part of this big network, but this one escaped, and it was floating all the way up from, you saw it down in Maryland the other day, didn't you?
Yes, I, so you had no involvement in it coming. I wonder how I got that wrong. Alright, so you didn't...
Had I had the opportunity, I would have gone for this thing. What I really would have liked to have done is grab onto that cable and hook a shortwave radio transmitter to that 6,000 foot long wire antenna and start broadcasting, because that signal would have gone global.
Yes, it would have. And yes, you're right. Kyle and I actually went down to Washington, D.C. last, Thursday?
Yes.
It's kind of cool because we weren't on the air last week, so we were able to sort of just stay up all night, and I guess we could have done that even if we were on the air. But we took a train down, and we arrived at 7 in the morning and walked right into the Hillary Clinton hearing. And afterwards, on the way back, you noticed it, Kyle. You noticed the blimp up in the air.
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
Yeah, and what did you say when you saw that blimp?
I said, "Look, it's a blimp." No, I knew exactly what it was. I knew it was some kind of like surveillance or military blimp, because I think we've reported about these. We've talked about them in and out over the past like couple years, maybe, and it's come up. But to really see it in action, it was worth. I ran to the front of the train to try to see out the window, and I tried to take some pictures of it, but it looks like a white speck.
Well,
in the blue sky. It's
that's kind of what it is. It is a white speck, but it was weird looking. We saw it right over Maryland.
Yeah.
They have two of these things, so this is a 50% chance the one you saw was the one that tried to escape today. And I think that's kind of what we were seeing. We were seeing yet another member of the intelligence community trying to escape and leak some secrets, and it was heading towards Canada before. Well, I guess Bernie wasn't the one who got to it, but somebody got to it. Somebody brought it down over Pennsylvania, and its secrets will not be known, I suppose.
There's a big, it looks like a pregnant blimp, and actually the technical name for these is an aerostat, which is a tethered blimp. And it had this big bulbous thing on the bottom that had a special radar on it. It didn't have a bunch of cameras on it like some surveillance platforms, but
Depends on what you consider a camera. I mean, it's a visualization. Yeah.
Bernie, I have an important question. You said this is an aerostat and not a blimp because it is tethered, but the whole point, the reason we're discussing it is that it became untethered. So does it then revert to being a blimp?
Yeah.
That's a good point. That's a very good question. I don't know. It could be called a free aerostat or or a blimp. I don't know.
Well, okay, I'm very ignorant about this, but what the tether is that the thing that the big cable, or does it have to be attached to the ground for it to be tethered?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the big cable. It's supposed to be tied down, and because
well, it had the big cable. It had the big cable throughout. That was the problem. The big cable was hitting power lines, and about 25,000 people lost power as a result.
Yep.
I was hearing reports on the way in. This is great. We were using the TuneIn app and listening to this station called WILK in Wilkes-Barre. Is that how you pronounce it? Wilkes-Barre.
Yes.
Yeah, and it was great. We were listening.
980 kilohertz.
Okay, yeah, and 103.1 FM, if you want to be legal about it.
Yep.
And we were listening to them talking all about this big balloon that came down near them, and it was really kind of awesome because they knew about it landing, I think, about 20 minutes before CNN ever reported that it landed, so that was kind of interesting right there. And it's the magic of radio, especially with the internet, where you can just tune in to where something is happening and listen to it live, listen to what's actually going on. But, yeah, the thing had its I think, 10,000-foot cable stringing along behind it, and it was uprooting trees and damaging cars. I'm surprised it didn't hurt people, and maybe it did. We might not know yet.
So the trucks hit it on, I think, I-80, the highway. Some trucks, big trucks hit the cable, and then it went over a high-tension power line and shorted out the grid in that area, and like you said, like about 20,000 people are still out of power from this thing.
But we're all really amazed that this happened in the first place. I saw the bulletin come over, and I was like, wow, this is going to be an interesting story as this plays out, because how do you bring something like that down? I still don't know how exactly it came down, because supposedly they can stay up for 30 days with the helium they have.
Yep.
Well, you know, as American citizens, I think we should all be used to having power drained from us by large bags of wind from D.C., so I think it's all appropriate.
Just another day in the exciting lives that we all lead here in this day and age. We are here tonight, though, as part of another two-hour show, I think one of the concluding shows of the fundraiser, the WBAI fundraiser. And, excuse me, we are about to offer some interesting things. I want to thank people who called in 2 weeks ago when we did another two-hour show. Tonight we're offering something completely different. And I think maybe we should just sort of plunge into that to start with. What do you guys, unless you have some urgent business you'd like to put forward?
There's no more urgent business than keeping us on the air.
That's true. That is true.
I second that.
Well, if you agree with that and you want to keep us on the air, the way to do that is to call 212-209-2950 and pledge a huge amount of money, just without even thinking about it. That would start off on a good note. But if you want to know what we're offering tonight, we have a couple of items, both based on our amazing Hope conferences that we hold every 2 years. We have had over the course of a couple of decades now, some of the most amazing people speaking as keynotes at our conferences. And what we're offering tonight is your choice of either a DVD collection, and that's a bunch of DVDs, or a thumb drive collection of all of our keynote addresses. And those include the likes of Steve Wozniak, Richard Stallman, Aaron Magruder, Edward Snowden, William Binney. I know I'm leaving out people. Feel free to jump in.
I mean, I think it's really amazing that we can just say, you know, include someone like Edward Snowden in just this long list of people who are as amazing as he is. And, of course, his speech is in conversation with Daniel Ellsberg, another amazing person who, and I really enjoyed it. I think it was the first time the two of them had spoken publicly, which is something, you know, they chose Hope for that because we are the kind of venue that will really hear them out, and you can really hear them out and hear what they had to say to each other and to the audience if you pledge for these packages.
Yeah, and the amounts that we're asking for these two gifts are rather low, actually. $50 pledge, 212-209-2950 will get you all the DVDs with all of the keynote addresses over the 10 conferences that we've had from 1994 to 2014. So you'll get everything. You'll get Jello Biafra, you'll get William Binney, Aaron Magruder, Edward Snowden, Daniel Ellsberg, Richard Stallman, Kevin Mitnick is in there. Just an incredible array of diversity and just enlightenment. And it's amazing to me because the Hope Conference has started as, well, it was a big conference when it started, the biggest of its kind in the United States, inspired by the Dutch conferences that had been taking place overseas. And it's grown. It's grown so much since then, not just in size, but in content. It's not just about hacking into computers and breaking security. It's about social issues as well. It's about all kinds of things that are in the news that we hear about every day. It's about leaks. It's about all kinds of other technological and non-technological things. When we had Jello Biafra speak, for instance, he had never even owned a computer at that point. Maybe he still hasn't. I don't know. And when we had Aaron Magruder speaking, people wondered, what does he have to do with computer hacking? And after he gave his talk, nobody asked that question anymore. So it's just an incredible way that the Hope Conferences have had over the years of reaching out and encompassing other communities as well. And that's what we've succeeded in, is expanding in that particular manner.
So have you said the amount to pledge yet?
I said 50 for the DVDs, 75 for the thumb drive. The thumb drive will get you video of all the keynote addresses as well. So it's your choice what media you want to receive it in. So,
I mean, that's just, you know, there are many programs on this radio station who you pledge $50 and they send you a DVD, and it's totally worth it because it's a great DVD. We're sending you over a dozen DVDs for your pledge of $50, and you're keeping us on the air for another few months, where we'll say more things, some of which might by chance be, you know, just a small percentage as insightful as these talks. That's amazing.
Yes. Yeah, it is. It shows the power that that you have as a listener as well, and how you're a part of this community in addition. So what we're going to do now is we're going to go back to 2006. And that was the year that Richard Stallman gave a keynote address at Hope Number 6. In fact, Kyle, you were in the room at the time. Do you remember this?
Yes.
I remember it, too. We didn't know each other at the time, but we were both in the same room. It was kind of cool. Richard Stallman was giving this keynote address.
He had a disc platter on his head.
He had a disc platter on. I don't remember that. Okay. It was on the 18th floor of the Hotel Pennsylvania, which is where the conferences take place. And there was this raging thunderstorm going on outside in the July afternoon. And there was lightning and thunder and Richard Stallman all together. I'm not sure how much of that came across in the video, because you'll note the first thing he does, well, apart from complaining about not having enough ice in his glass, he was complaining about the lights. So he made us dim the lights on him. So I'm not sure if that makes the lightning show up more. It might. So that could be a good thing right there.
Yes, this is Richard Stallman walking in with a disc platter on his head. He takes it off when he starts talking, but he did have a disc platter on his head.
All right, so let's go back to 2006.
A big one.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. When you think of disc platter, you probably think like a CD or a floppy disc, but it's like I don't know.
Yeah, from
20,
like
30 centimeters.
From like the
thick?
Yeah, the multi-user systems, you know, the big discs.
I don't know how to describe them any
we
better than that.
We can't
yeah.
do it justice. You're both failing miserably yeah, at describing this. The only way that you can appreciate what they are attempting to describe is to see it.
Yeah, it's beyond words.
And you can see it by pledging either $50 or $75, 212-209-2950, and getting all of the keynote addresses that we have had since 1994, from the very first conference with Robert Steele to the very last one with Edward Snowden and Daniel Ellsberg. So that's what we're offering, but we're going to go into a clip now from 2006 in a storm-ravaged New York. Richard Stallman.
Everyone, a man who needs no introduction.
Oh, it's warm, Pepsi.
Is it?
It seems to be. Is there any ice available?
We'll fix it.
Good.
Ladies and gentlemen, RMS.
Why are you turning those lights on? It's too hot in here already.
Yeah,
So turn them down, okay? You don't have to shine lights in my face to make me talk. Down, 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 down. Now, a little more light in the audience would be good so that I don't fall asleep. It's okay if you sleep. No, you won't make a bunch of people unhappy if you do. But I shouldn't sleep here. Anyway, we apologize for this delay due to late arrival of equipment. And we expect to get you moving shortly and wish you a pleasant listen on the way to the end of the speech or wherever your final destination may be. So I'm going to talk about free software and the hacker community. First of all, I better explain what free software means, since probably even a lot of you have not heard what it means. Free software means software that respects the user's freedom. There are four essential freedoms for the user of software, freedoms that every software user should always have. And these four freedoms make the definition of free software. Freedom zero is the freedom to run the program as you wish for any purpose. Freedom one is the freedom to study the source code and change it so that the program does what you wish. Freedom two is the freedom to help your neighbor. That's the freedom to make copies and distribute them to others, including publication. And freedom three is the freedom to contribute to your community, and that's the freedom to distribute your modified versions, including publication, when you wish. None of these is an obligation. You're never required to do any of these things, but the point is you're free to do them if you wish. And that means the software respects your freedom and respects the social solidarity of your community. If you use a program that doesn't give you freedom number two, you're in danger of falling into a moral dilemma at any moment when your friend says, "Could I have a copy of that program?" At that moment, you will be forced to choose between two evils. One evil is to give your friend a copy and violate the license of the program. The other evil is to deny your friend a copy and comply with the license of the program. Now, once you're in the dilemma, you should choose the lesser evil, which is to give your friend a copy and violate the license of the program. This is the lesser evil because it's directed at somebody who has done wrong. We can suppose that your friend is a good friend, a helpful person, and ordinarily would deserve your cooperation. Whereas the developer of a proprietary program has deliberately attacked the social solidarity of your community. Now, that's wrong. So if you can't help doing wrong to somebody, better it should be a wrongdoer that you do it to. However, to be the lesser evil does not mean it's good. It's never good to make an agreement and not keep it. Now, it may be less bad than keeping the agreement, depending on what you agreed to do, but it's never good. And an unauthorized copy of a non-free program shares most of the ethical ills of an authorized copy. The only one it doesn't share is that of rewarding the perpetrator. So what you should really do once you have understood this dilemma is make sure you're never in it. Don't set foot on the path that's going to lead you someday to that dilemma. And there are two ways to avoid it. One is don't have any friends. That's the method suggested by the proprietary software developers. And the other method is don't use proprietary software. That's the method I prefer. That way, I don't have to worry about a moral dilemma if someone asks for a copy of a program I've got on my computer. because I will only accept free software onto it. If someone offers me an attractive, convenient program on the condition that I promise not to share it with you, I will say no, because that's the right thing to do. And I would rather forego the convenience and fun of that program than put myself in a situation where I'd be ashamed of what I had done. Thank you. But just being free to share does not mean that you're in control of your own computer. For that, you need freedom number one. You need to be able to study the program and change it. That's what enables you to decide what your computer does. If you use a program that doesn't give you freedom number one, the freedom to study the source code and change it, then the developer controls what you can do, and you are under the developer's power. This is unjust. This is an unjust system of subjugation. If you don't have freedom number one, you can't even tell for certain what the program does. Lots of proprietary programs have malicious features. Because once a developer is in a position of power, the developer faces the temptation to go one step further and start using that power specifically to mistreat others. So they put in spy features and features designed to restrict the user, and even back doors. Now, spyware is quite common. One proprietary program that you might have heard of that spies on the user is called Windows XP. When the user of Windows XP, and I won't say you because I'm sure you wouldn't use a program like this, when the user of Windows XP searches her own files for a word, it sends a message saying what word was searched for. That's one spy feature. But there's another that we know of. When Windows XP asks for an upgrade, it sends Microsoft a list of all the software installed on the machine. Now, these spy features were not announced by Microsoft. People had to discover them through investigation, which was not always easy. There may be others which we don't know about. But spying is not limited to Windows. Windows Media Player also spies on the user. It reports everything the user looks at. Total surveillance. But please don't think that this is something that only Microsoft, the great Satan, would do. Because, in fact, RealPlayer was the first such program to do this kind of spying. Total surveillance, reporting everything the user looks at. And all Microsoft did was imitate them. Lots of companies spy on the user, and interestingly, the TiVo spies on the user in the same way, reporting everything the user looks at. Now, this is particularly interesting because the TiVo uses a lot of free software. It has a small GNU plus Linux operating system in it. And when it was first released, a lot of people in our community applauded it for using free software. But it also contains non-free software, and it has malicious features like spying on the user and digital restrictions management. And this shows that to use free software, which implicitly means to use some free software some of the time, is not a sufficient target. The target has to be to use only software that respects your freedom so that you have full freedom. Anything less is insufficient. And the TiVo is also an example of another malicious practice that I'll talk about later. But malicious features go beyond spying on the user. There's also the functionality of refusing to function, where the program says, I don't want to show you this file. I don't want to let you copy part of this file. I'm not going to print this file for you because I don't like you enough. This is DRM, Digital Restrictions Management, or Digital Handcuffs, where the program is designed specifically to restrict you for the sake of someone else. It becomes a simple instrument of someone else's power over you. And then there are back doors. There was a proprietary program called Interbase, which was liberated, and then the users could see that it contained a back door, and they could fix it. Presumably it had the same back door when it was proprietary, but the users couldn't see it or fix it. Another proprietary program that has a back door that you may have heard of is called Windows XP. You see, when Windows XP asks for an upgrade, Microsoft can identify the user, which means that they can deliver that user an upgrade designed specifically for him. They can take total control of that person's machine in any way they want, and that user has very little recourse. So we know about this backdoor because we can deduce it from known facts, but there might be others. Microsoft was caught in 1999 having put a backdoor in a piece of server software for the NSA. And there might be backdoors introduced by others that Microsoft doesn't know about. For instance, some programmers in India working on the development of Windows XP were arrested and accused of working for Al-Qaeda, trying to introduce another backdoor that Microsoft wasn't supposed to know about. Well, apparently that attempt failed. Was there another attempt that succeeded? We can't tell. Now, there are various kinds of malicious features that proprietary software developers can put in, but not all of them do so. Some do and some don't. Of course, you can't necessarily tell which is which. So the result is that all proprietary software is just trust me software, where you surrender to a blind faith in a developer which you know might not deserve it. But what of the ones that don't put in malicious features? Well, they may be honest, but they're still human, so they make mistakes. And that means that their code has bugs. And the user of a program without freedom number one, the freedom to study and change the source code, is just as helpless confronting an unintended error in the code as she is confronting a deliberate misfeature. The user of a non-free program is a prisoner of his software. Now, we, the developers of free software, are also human, so our code has errors too. Every non-trivial program has bugs. The difference is that we respect your freedom. So when you find errors in our code, you can fix them. We can't make ourselves perfect. We can treat you decently.
Wow. We could listen to that all night. We have to stop at some place. But that was Richard Stallman giving the keynote address at Hope Number 6 back in 2006 here in New York City. And
it's always crazy to hear a mention of the NSA in some of these talks from way back.
Yeah.
It's really, there are some premonitions, there's some I think, I don't know, it feels good to hear that. It's encouraging. It makes you feel like some of the things people have been saying for a long time are being looked at in new light.
Guess what, guys?
In new context.
We were on this decades ago, and reading early issues of 2600, people were talking about the NSA spying on Americans then. You know, it took a long time for the masses to catch up, for the media to actually report this. But yeah, the hackers knew what was going on, and people like Richard Stallman certainly were sharing that information.
And I dare say, I think as much work as there is to be done, I mean, people are more aware of this kind of surveillance in general.
Mm-hmm.
The woman sitting next to me on the train, when I was talking about this this freed Aerostat, she was the one that told me it was a Aerostat.
Yeah, you were getting all excited about the blimp in the
didn't
sky.
Didn't know what to call
and,
it.
And she knew what it was.
Totally familiar.
She was from Maryland, I think.
She's local, yeah. So we now talk every day. You know, everyday discussion can cover surveillance dirigibles and the like. Uh-huh. So this is the kind of world we live in. It's no longer speculation or sort of the spook crowd so much that we get that we're affirmed that we get information from, and of course any that we dismiss. I mean, it's not something to dismiss. This stuff is real, and it's an everyday conversation.
And as that conversation continues in sort of the mainstream, as people are in general talking more about the NSA and starting to question its position in all our lives, it really strikes me that that's, you know, okay, we were talking about that at our conferences in 2006. We've been talking about it on this station for much longer than that. And that's the sort of thing that this station allows to happen. That's the sort of thing that would not happen on other stations, because there's nothing else like WBAI. And the only thing that's been keeping WBAI in the air for so many decades, generations even, has been you, the people listening to this. You are the ones we're answerable to, and you're the ones that are willing to put your money where your mouth is and say, yes, I believe this station should stay on the air. I think programs on this station should stay on the air. And the only way you can do that is by calling 212-209-2950 or by going to give2wbai.org.
Now, what we're offering tonight is a collection of all of our keynote addresses for all the HOPE conferences. There have been 10 of them since 1994. We just heard an excerpt from HOPE number 6. And really, a vast array of different kinds of speakers, different subject material. And you get all of that on DVDs, each one a separate DVD, some multiple DVDs, for a pledge of $50, 212-209-2950. If you prefer a flash drive instead, where you can copy the files, no DRM on our files, you can copy them and then use the flash drive for anything else you wish to use it for, you'll get that for a pledge of $75, 212-209-2950. Bernie, I know you were in the room during the Richard Stallman talk. Any memories?
It was riveting. He was one of the volunteers. I found RMS to be one of our more challenging keynote speakers, but riveting conversation, riveting talks.
You're talking about the ice in the Pepsi glass. That was a challenge.
You know, he's just a challenging speaker. We'll say that he, you know, not only was he challenging to manage, he challenged you to think. And that's why we choose all of our HOPE speakers. They challenge us to think, and that's what this radio station, WBAI, does, is it challenges you to think. It doesn't just cram commercial crap down your throat, into your ears, hoping that you will buy something. This is a radio station, unlike any other, that would air this kind of material. You're not going to hear this anywhere else. And I also want to thank 2600 Enterprises for donating these DVDs and flash drives, which are a tremendous value to our listeners. The radio station's a tremendous value, but this particular set of premiums is outstanding. I applaud you for putting this together, Emmanuel. So I want to encourage our listeners, if this is the kind of material you support hearing on this station or anywhere, call 212-209-2950 for a mere $50. You get at least a dozen DVDs with this kind of riveting material. Over $75, you can get a USB flash drive. You can just put it in your pocket and listen to it without an optical drive. But the most important thing is to support this station, which is the only station I know of that has the courage to air this kind of material. 212-209-2950.
I'd like to very quickly play one more excerpt from a different conference. This going back to the year 2000. I was just looking at h2k.net. You know, we still have the website up, it looks like it hasn't been touched since around that time. I see there's a mention of h2k2 in 2002, so that might be the last time anyone ever touched that website. And it's cool because you see that we're planning it, and H2K just happened, and we just kind of moved on to the next website. We didn't change the page at all. We just changed the name and got a different site. So, yeah, I'm seeing about Jello Biafra giving the H2K keynote speech, and how much of a milestone that was. That really was a milestone, because at that point in the year 2000, we selected a keynote speaker that was not really known to the hacker world. It wasn't somebody who was a security expert or a hacker extraordinaire. It was somebody with interesting ideas that anybody who was open to them would find fascinating. And we find that most hackers are open to interesting ideas. Whether they agree with them or not, they are always interested in hearing it and debating it and learning more and spreading information. So with that in mind, we asked Jello to give the talk at H2K in 2000. And from that point, I think the tone of Hope conferences changed to include not only talks about computer hacking and security and various other things like that, but also social issues and a much bigger world. And in so doing, we also brought more people into the community. And I think that was a real turning point.
I think so. I think with people like Jello Biafra, with like Aaron Magruder, who created the comic strip Boondocks and later the TV show, all these interesting people we get in who aren't necessarily what you would call computer hackers themselves. Some of them didn't even have a computer at the time, but they approach things, they approach their own fields and subjects of expertise with a hacker spirit, something that's very much in the hacker spirit. Jello Biafra coming from the punk world, Aaron Magruder coming from the art world, people like the Yes Men, just all these different individuals who are willing to still challenge us to think, as Bernie said. They really do, and I think they add a whole lot to the conference, and you can get that whole package by calling 212-209-2950 or going to give2wbai.org and showing your support for us.
Okay, this excerpt is only a couple of minutes, and it's from Jello Biafra back in the year 2000 at the H2K conference.
Oh, who are some of the other ones? News Corporation, owned by that noted progressive humanitarian Rupert Murdoch, who owns Fox. Their agenda certainly isn't to tell it like it is, let alone put interesting stuff on the air. You know, part of the way you get people to shut up and shop is to dumb down the news to help dumb down the people. Even in the late 80s, there were surveys pointing out, like from Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, who everybody here should support and get to know, among others, that even then there had already been a 25% reduction in actual news on the news programs. And now what you get is, good evening, here's the news. 20 minutes of O.J. Simpson, Monica Lewinsky, JonBenet Ramsey, or Princess Diana, or whatever. Then a quick shot to the instant cam. Well, yeah, there was some weird-ass car wreck here about 4 hours ago, but the street does seem to be empty now. Now back to you. Well, now word from our sponsor, then weather, then sports. And that, you know, it's basic, and that's all the news you need to know. Dumbing down the people and deliberately keeping them that uninformed is rather anti-democratic, if you ask me, because people can't make informed decisions if they don't know what the hell's going on. And, I mean, it's basically a way of just keeping people asleep, so it's better, because it's, after all, for the corporate world order, it's better that we function as livestock instead of active and proactive thinkers. Like in the old Soviet evil empire and communist China, the way you control the masses and make them livestock through advertising is basically fear of not keeping up with the state. We're here and you know, give them as little information as possible. Here, we bombard people with so much information they don't necessarily know where to begin to sift through it all, and it's fear of not keeping up with the Joneses instead. And so it's sort of a modern lobotomy through fear, if you will. It's like, oh my God, what's wrong with me? I'm not making $1 million as a .com executive.
And that was Jello Biafra from 2000, from our H2K conference, part of the package we're offering tonight as part of the WBAI fundraiser. You will get that keynote address. You will get all the keynote addresses from every Hope conference that has ever taken place here in New York City. For a pledge of $50, you'll get DVDs. For a pledge of $75, you'll get a flash drive. And it's riveting. And you'll also get video, which you don't get on the radio. And I should point out, that sound was degraded because we pulled that from an online source. You'll get a much better sounding audio from that as well, in addition to the video. 212-209-2950 is the phone number to call to support Off the Hook, to support WBAI, to support the Hope Conferences and Freedom of Speech. And as you can see, when Jello was giving that talk, he opened up a lot of eyes. A lot of people were riveted who had never heard of him before. And he actually had so much fun that he came back to several Hope Conferences afterwards and gave more talks. And he almost became a tradition for every Hope Conference afterwards. We haven't had him in the last few, but maybe we'll have him again.
It really added a lot. I remember watching that keynote, and it was an excellent talk. It really covered a whole lot of ground. And I remember after the conference, samples of the talk started coming up. It found its way back into the music world, and a couple of musicians had sampled clips of his talk in their work. I remember there was a Chumbawamba remix. There were some other things, but it was really interesting stuff. And it, as you said, added a whole lot to what Hope was in general, I think.
Yes, Bernie, any recollections of this one?
I do. Actually, I ran into Jello arrived at the hotel that year, I think, around 2, 3 in the morning. I happened to be in the Hotel Pennsylvania lobby, and I saw him wandering around. I was like, yeah, Jello. So we had to find a hotel room for him, and I think I woke you up on your cell phone. You were not too happy, understandably. But we got him situated, and he gave a fantastic talk the next day. As Rob said, it opened a lot of eyes. This is like, this guy's not from the hacker community, but you know, he is. He hacks media. And he did it when he was with the Dead Kennedys, and he's still doing it today. And you can pick up a copy of this amazing keynote speech by Jello Biafra with 10 other riveting keynote speakers from the Hope series of conferences by calling 212-209-2950. $50, you can get them all on DVD. $75, you can get them on a convenient USB flash drive. This is with video and high-quality audio. But most importantly, you're supporting the station, WBAI, that allows us to play this kind of material for your mind, so you can really think about things that you're not going to hear on any other radio station, TV station, or other media source. So please call 212-209-2950. This is a great value, but the biggest value is this radio station, 212-209-2950.
And you mentioned that there were 10 others, actually more than 10 others, because there were some conferences where we had more than one keynote speaker. So we're including all of those as well. And I believe we're also adding some additional favorite talks of our own. So you're going to get a bunch. You're going to get a bunch of talks, more than a dozen, certainly. And I don't think anything is more worth it than that.
We're getting a message from our remote producer that some people are calling and the people who answer the phone are a little bit confused. So what you do is you call 212-209-2950 and you ask for the Hope Archives thumb drive, if that's what you want to pledge for. That's a pledge of $75. Or the Hope Archives DVD collection, that's a pledge of $50. Use those magic words and you should be able to get what you want and help keep us on the air. Or use some other magic words and just keep us on the air.
Or you can go to give2wbai.org and use your own words and hopefully find it that way. But you should be able to just keep trying. If for some reason you wind up with a confused person, hang up and call back and you'll get someone less confused. That's how I deal with the phone company, so it probably works here as well. 212-209-2950. Is our telephone number. Hey, let's look at some news items in the interim before we go to our next clip. Again, we're on for 2 hours tonight with a special expanded edition. I'd like to focus on hackers in trouble because that's sort of a regular feature here. And this is the case. This comes from the Daily Star over in the UK of Charlton Float. You hear about this case? The whole big expose on this kid. He was just 16 years old when he hacked the British and U.S. government sites, crashing them in January 2013. Now, keep in mind, I'm reading this from the Daily Star, so there are going to be some funny words in there, such as the British and U.S. government sites. He didn't crash them all, I don't think, but it makes it sound like he did. He said he wanted to be famous when asked why he had done it. A court heard the intelligent, that's in quotes, team and other hackers bombarded the websites with huge quantities of digital traffic, causing the home office site to crash for 83 minutes. Wow. The FBI site, which was the holy grail for hackers, you all knew that, of course, right? It was down for...
I regularly drink wine from the FBI website.
Well, you said it. It was down for almost 5 hours a few days earlier, meaning people were unable to report crimes.
What?
That's what it says. That's what it says.
Can you report crimes on the FBI website?
Apparently you can. But this guy was making it impossible for people to do that. I love reading stories like this. A cocky Float, that's how they refer to him, this cocky kid named Float, was caught after he bragged about the attacks on a hacker's internet forum, we've all been there, and on Twitter, where he said the FBI site had been down for nearly 5 hours. Well, I don't know why we needed him to say it if it was down for 5 hours, but whatever. Police then linked him to the hacks when he used his own IP address to check how effective the attacks had been.
Boo.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he was 16 then. He didn't know anybody. He's 17 now, and probably... Well, I don't know how old he is.
Maybe he should take some lessons from some 14-year-olds.
This is how we learn. Okay, after he was nicked, officers... Again, a British term. Officers also found Float had downloaded... Oh, boy, here we go. 111 prohibited images of children. On March 31st, April 7th, and June 2nd of last year, when he was aged 17 and 18. Not at the same time. Okay, there was some kind of progression there. Here's the part that's really kind of weird. The pictures were in cartoon form and had the common theme of mature mothers engaging in sexual acts with their sons who were as young as 9 or 10. Cartoons? Cartoons are prohibited images now?
Well, yeah, obscenity's pretty nasty.
Yeah, but prohibited. Illegal. Cartoons.
Yeah.
Really?
Depiction. Yeah.
I mean, Prophet Muhammad was one thing, but this? Really?
This is a whole show. We need like a whole 4-hour show to unpack this.
But this is the UK. It's not the case here, right? If you draw a stick figure and say that's, you know... I don't want to give people
depends
ideas.
Depends on who's asking.
But come on, it's we're getting a little crazy here.
It's true, it's a little crazy, but yeah, I mean, depends on who you're asking in this country and, uh-huh. and what you're asking about. But anyway, there's a lot to it, but that doesn't surprise me.
Well, anyway, this guy was spared jail, sentenced to 8 months in prison, suspended for 18 months. Wait, I don't understand how that works. I was bad at math. Sentenced to 8 months in prison, suspended for 18 months. So that means...
Yeah, if you don't do anything else for 18 months, then you don't have an 8-month prison sentence.
I thought he got like 10 free months somewhere. Okay, so he stays out of trouble for 18 months with a supervision order.
I mean, I assume that's what it means. I don't know the British legal system.
Sentencing recorder, John Steele, I don't know, he sounds serious. He said, these actions were wrong, serious, and criminal. You must have known this from the outset. They are absolutely nothing to be proud of. The defendant was, at the time of offenses, 16 years old, partially driven by fascination of computer hacking. He was craving for recognition by fellow hackers and driven by a sense of youthful bravado.
This was written by native speakers of English?
To a like-minded community, boasting to others in the hackers community about his prowess and achievements. The consultant forensic psychiatrist found insufficient evidence that you suffer from an autism spectrum disorder. And it goes on from there. Basically, he was read the Riot Act and promised never to do anything bad again. But, you know, I think it's good that he didn't go to jail. It would be nice if that was the default, where people who get into this kind of trouble didn't wind up going to jail.
It'd be nice if hacker bravado did not include bragging about that kind of crap.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it would be nice if adulation and acknowledgement from your friends didn't require that. I mean, I think he's in a, you know, but also at an age where you kind of have to expect there's a little of that going on.
Well, these are social issues that, yeah, we have to deal with, absolutely, but I think the bigger issue is keeping kids out of jail and keeping kids from having criminal records that will follow them around for the rest of their lives.
Right.
And not charging people with crimes for ridiculous things like cartoons and things like that.
Yeah, and I'm willing to wager that if not all, then most people, maybe in this room, as well as listening to us, maybe did something irresponsible when they were a teenage kid.
Maybe.
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 Possibly.
Absolutely not.
But
I waited until I was an adult.
Yeah.
Good job. But yeah, if everything that a stupid kid did that was stupid, that was maybe not a good decision, ended up in a huge sort of write-up like this, where they're taking gleefully every opportunity to say everything possible, possibly negative about this kid. Oh, look, he also had cartoons that might scare you. He also, yelled at his mother and crossed the street without looking both ways, and all this stuff. It really tells a lot about not only this media outlet, but also the attitude in general when it comes to the press and look at this hacker. Oh my God, this is a scary person. Look at all this other stuff they're doing. So.
Well, and justice in general.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, exactly. This is in particular hacking and stuff, but I mean, you should have a chance to say your side of the story and present yourself, in the best of light, as you'd like to explain, get your day in court, as it were. But to a certain degree, the media and so on is free to do what they will and characterize people in the ways they will, and without actually looking at some of these crazy, crazy laws and ways of interpreting them in some instances. But.
Yeah, I'm actually having a little bit of a hard time getting worked up about this compared to some of the stuff that would happen in the States in an equivalent situation. Like, look, it's not nice to take down other people's websites. And if you take down a powerful person's website, you're more likely to get into trouble.
It's not nice.
But,
you're right. It's not nice.
But at least he's not like suffering decades in jail. And like, and I hate that I'm rationalizing it in this way. But compared to the States, this sounds great.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there are bad things that happen over in the UK as well.
As far as
sentencing people for ridiculous crimes. And there are cases in the States where people don't get sentenced to prison for being mischievous or even stupid. You have to look at what we're really talking about here. What we're really talking about is the FBI website going down for 5 hours. Okay, pain in the ass, but I think the blimp escaping is more of a pain in the ass for the government, and nobody's going to prison for that. It's just this is education. This is how we learn how to design better websites. And how we learn what the weak points are. If our own teenagers are defeating the security of our infrastructure, imagine what true enemies of the state would do. So consider it a learning experience, and maybe communicate with these kids a little better, and you won't have criminals in prison for decades that wind up hating you.
Yeah, they're finding out what is cool and what is acceptable and appropriate behavior, there should be some allowance for that. There should be measured responses, and I think that's been kind of a theme in the last couple of months, is the kinds of responses we get, all the way from corporate letters to people suggesting things to specific incidents like this and on and on.
Absolutely. Bernie, any thoughts?
Yeah, it just reminds me of other crazy cases we heard about in the UK. This one doesn't really work me up either, like Mike, but we had the mom of Richard O'Dwyer on this show 3 or 4 years ago, who set up a website called TV Shack. And he was providing links to other websites where you could download TV shows that other people had recorded and put on other servers. That guy really was looking at some serious time. He was extradited to the United States. It was really crazy stuff. Like you said, these are young people who have discovered vulnerabilities and done frankly, a public service to these companies who have really, if they really want to protect their property, should protect their intellectual property or what they would even claim is their intellectual property, protect it better. So, this is the kind of stuff we talk about on the show that I don't know many other radio stations would play this kind of material because, commercial media has an interest in intellectual property and protecting it and whatever, but we sort of have a different viewpoint of it, as certainly RMS, who we played earlier tonight, has a very different viewpoint about this sort of thing. So if you like hearing this kind of material, I'd encourage listeners to support this station and and get a lot of this content shipped to you by calling 212-209-2950. You can get a DVD set with more than a dozen Hope keynote speeches or a USB flash drive with the same material on it for $75. But the main thing is to support this station by calling 212-209-2950. You will have many, many hours of really riveting stuff to listen to, and you'll keep the station on the air so you can listen to many more.
I echo what you said about saying things that and playing things, talking about things that are not popular. I mean, think about the last thing Jello said was basically that you have peer pressure to make your $1 million in the .com startup arena. And I think that's so funny, and it's apropos. It's now, I mean, gosh, that seems like such a little amount of money in that world. And today I think it's even it's overcrowded to the extent that it's not even what you would aspire to. You just want to go work for one of those companies. The people coming up now aren't even thinking that way. I don't think the pressure's there. They just want to, like, find one of those places that maybe will pay them and on. Or maybe they, you know, want to create something that's even more massive and costly. And to what end? It basically is another behemoth of a tech company that does nothing and either spies or, you know, ruins tech for people. I mean, whatever it does, it does. And, you know, these are ideas that you wouldn't normally hear. I mean, people talk about tech in passing so easily. We aren't as critical. We're not conditioned to be critical of the structure of some of these industries and the kind of mediated world that we are navigating with all of these new tools and stuff. We have the promise of such easy information and ease of so many things, but the ramifications, the implications, the sheer greed at play behind it and the impact that greed is having, that stuff matters. And you're not going to hear that on like your commercial stations, the kind of evening news that Jello was talking about. That's not popular. And even in the tech world, I think we would have a hard time because we wouldn't be talking venture capital numbers. We wouldn't be talking about which business we started this week and how our serial entrepreneurship is going and our portfolio this and that and the other thing. You know, we wouldn't do well in those circles either. That's what this is about. This is community broadcast. We can talk about whatever we want here. And we're here opening these things up. We're here to learn too. We're by all means not experts. I've been meaning to say this for years. In case you haven't checked, like, we're not experts. We are here to learn. We're here to analyze this stuff. We go over it. We're familiar, and we are absolutely passionate and interested in this area. But we depend as much on listeners and on the community around us, this special community here, the radio station and beyond, to support us and to challenge us, maybe provide us with corrections. You can do that. Hey, OTH@2600.com. That's where you write. You write a letter. You can write us an email. We'll play a file if it's clean. We'll play something if you observe something you recorded. Or we've done all kinds of things like that in the past, and we really do benefit from this community. So I just wanted to get that out. That this really does matter. This is important stuff, and what Bernie's talking about is no joke. It's a special thing to have this transmitter and this station going the way it is. And, gosh, we've got a lot to hope for in the future.
Absolutely. Well said, Kyle. And you are listening to WBAI New York. It's just after 8 o'clock. Personal Computer Show is not on tonight, unfortunately. Well, the fortunate part is that we're on. And we're on for another hour, and we're going to bring you a few more excerpts of talks from the Hope Conference. Kyle, you got something else?
Should I get off the table now?
Yeah, you can sit back down. Okay. Absolutely, thank you. We are going to go now to the year of 2012. That's when Hope Number 9 took place. Now, this is particularly interesting, and as we've been saying, we're offering a special collection tonight of all of our keynote addresses that have taken place at Hope Conferences throughout the years. For a pledge of $50, you'll get a bunch of DVDs. For a pledge of $75, you'll get a thumb drive with all of the DVD quality files on them. that you can copy and spread around to your heart's content. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. And Mike, the secret words to say to the people to not confuse them, what were they again?
It is the Hope Archive. Sorry, I lost my email.
We're all confused here.
I'm confused.
Yeah.
It's the Hope Archives thumb drive or the Hope Archives DVD collection.
Yeah.
212-209-2950.
If you say the Hope Archives, that should pretty much trigger.
You think so?
Yeah, I hope so. 212-209-2950. That's our phone number. Now, what we're going to do is go to some excerpts, a couple of excerpts, actually, from William Binney's talk. Now, William Binney was an NSA analyst who turned into an NSA whistleblower. Keep in mind, this was before Edward Snowden appeared on the scene. And it was particularly interesting because Laura Poitras was there. Remember
she
this,
was.
Kyle?
Yeah,
we met Binney at the train station, at Penn Station, and we all escorted him up to the hotel before his talk. And the things he was saying, they seemed unbelievable at the time. There, he was talking about the NSA spying domestically on Americans, and the numbers he was giving out just seemed so incredible, the amount of data. And I remember the mass media just basically brushing this off, not taking it seriously, even though this guy had been raided and harassed by the authorities himself for daring to release this information and to actually share with people that had every right to know what the NSA was really up to. And it wasn't until Edward Snowden came on the scene a year or so later that people really started to wake up. But this is a good example of how the speakers at Hope conferences were ahead of the game and are courageous, too. A lot of them have such guts to come out and speak out against what are really, really powerful adversaries. That's something that William Binney will forever have my respect for, because it took a lot of guts to do what he did. And so many people don't even know his name, and I think that needs to change. You'll get his whole talk, 212-209-2950, pledge for the Hope Archive premiums. Let's take a listen to William Binney from 2012 in New York City. He most certainly was in the NSA buildings that we saw just a moment ago. Well, after 9/11, he noticed a change in what the NSA was doing. He saw that the technology was being used against Americans in our own country, and that was too much for him to deal with. And he became, instead of an NSA analyst, he became an NSA whistleblower. And I think there's nothing more courageous than standing up to such a powerful entity and letting the rest of us know what's really going on. And with that, it's my honor to introduce as our keynote this Friday, William Binney.
Thank you very much. Thank you to the coordinators of HOPE for inviting me here to give me the opportunity to express my story. Some of it was hard to believe. I'm sure you'll find some of it difficult to believe. I find some of it difficult myself to even believe that actually things like this happened and our government did these kinds of things. But what I'd like to do is go through my entire background with NSA and how I handled the events in 9/11 after that, and all the things that happened with the Department of Justice and us after that. Plus, then I'd like to go into some of the technology that is involved in large database analysis with you, and then give you my impression of what the White House's new initiative on big data analysis is really all about, even though they can't say it correctly. This is really what they're asking, and I'll try to define that for you, and hopefully that'll give you some idea. It'll certainly give you a better idea, I believe, how these events occurring and how dangerous metadata is to monitoring the entire population. As I've said before in different forums, the KGB, the Stasi, and the Gestapo could never have dreamt of having anything as great or as comprehensive as this capacity to monitor the population. Their primary focus, they tried to get information about their population so they could control it, and that's fundamentally what dictatorships and totalitarian systems do around the world. And that, unfortunately, is the way our government is going. And so I'll try to define what that's all about, the technology behind that, and what they're asking now and in the future. And they're spending hundreds of millions to do that a year here. Yeah, well, here's how this solution worked. You know, it was actually penciled out. It wasn't done in the computer. You know, the point is that miracles don't happen in the computer. They happen in your mind, and you relate them on paper. And you could see them on paper, and then you build the programs to manage them. Computers can do a certain amount, but fundamentally the trick is to get your mind wrapped around the problem to where you can understand it, to the point where you can see into it and begin to break it apart and solve it. So, at any rate, 9/11 happened, and so I started thinking, maybe I should reconsider retiring because I always wanted to do something positive, like stop the bad guys, even though there was all this corruption around me, you know. It must have been right after, a few days, no more than a week after 9/11, that they had decided to begin actively spying on everyone in this country. And they were doing it by taking billing data from telecoms. But what I didn't know at the time was in February of 2001, they had already started requesting that data from different telecoms. This is when the CEO of Quest refused them, and he went into court and testified to that, and that he was approached by some three-star general out of NSA to provide customer data. But that was in February of 2001. Well, the point was that we had put our system together from end to end and had it functioning in November of 2000. So this is 3 months after that, which meant that they wanted that back part of our program to run all the spying. All right? So that's exactly what they did. So then they started taking the telecom data, and it expanded after that. So, I mean, the one I knew was AT&T, and that one provided 320 million records every day. That was just phone calls. And then when they got the taps in, like the ones in San Francisco, they started the Naris devices to take the data off the internet. So what I did after that was, I was naive enough to think that the government would really, if people in certain positions of the government knew this was going on, that they would take some action to correct it, or at least bring it back into some constitutional form of, or some process that was constitutionally acceptable. You know, so I went to the House, Senate, the House Intelligence Committee, the HPSI, and the staff member that I personally knew there, and she then went to Porter Goss, who was the chairman of that committee, and also Nancy Pelosi, who was the deputy or the minority rep. They were all briefed into the program at the time, by the way, and all the other programs that were going on, including all these CIA programs. Porter Goss referred her to General Hayden out at NSA. Well, I mean, you know, it's going back to the origin of this program. So, and he went out there, and of course, she talked to him, and he said, of course, we don't have to worry about that now. It's all been approved by the White House, and it's legal. So spying on everybody then was legal internally. It was all written up in memos by you and I guess others held in. In fact, I know the NSA lawyer went down to Addington's office in Cheney's, who was right outside of Cheney's office. Addington was his legal rep there. And he asked for